Where do I put this fire? This bright red feeling. This tiger lily down my mouth. He wants to grow to 20 feet tall. I've left Bethlehem and I feel free. I've left the girl I was supposed to be. Someday I'll be born.
I haven't made any New Year's resolutions, but I did join a gym and I have worked out almost daily since 2009 started. I'm looking forward to change, and I guess I just want to be ready for it. I don't know what changes are going to come this year, but they are coming. They're in the air. They're rippling through the ground. Maybe my abs will be rippling this year too. Yes, it's a sense of hope there. Not just about my abs. More generally, about global changes, and about my place in the world, and my ability to negotiate my way through it all. So today, we're going to help you get ready to face the changes and prepare for your goals, get in shape, so to speak, with some seminars to get our heads and our minds in shape. The 2008 Athena Women's Leadership Conference brought nearly 300 women together for about 20 sessions. Today, I have portions of three of those sessions. Athena, Women's Leadership Conference. Athena is the goddess of wisdom. And as the goddess of wisdom, Athena is definitely the appropriate icon for this conference and the sessions. Wisdom to prepare us for the changes ahead. Now, you're going to hear some common themes running throughout these presentations, like learning and growing, and empowering women, of course. But also, you're going to hear some zing. Yep, zing. It's something that keynote speaker Nancy Hunter Denny brought to the opening talk. And it kind of caught on and it recurred throughout the conference. So listen for zing.
Seem to be in perfect harmony. Zing with the strings of my heart.
From KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, this is Yin Radio, and it's from the Athena Women's Leadership Conference. So our theme today is Wisdom from Athena. Starting off our wisdom show, Dr. Emma Jane Grindley. She's going to talk about the team approach to getting things done and your personal role within that team. Emma Grindley is an instructor in the Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance Department at the University of Idaho. She's a sports psychologist. Among other degrees, she holds a master's degree in community counseling. Her talk is called How to Play Nice, a Team Approach to Getting It Done. This section starts with a definition of a team versus a group.
So first off, what's the difference between a team and a group? Together towards the goal. And that is the real key differentiating quality between the group and the team. It's working together towards that goal. So the positives, if we look at the team and why the way I think of a team is that if we're working together towards that goal, we can be potentially more efficient. We can use our creative power and our knowledge together to get towards that common goal. Hopefully, at the end, We have energy for ourselves at the end of the day, which I think is so important that we can't give it all to work and be exhausted. Because if you go home and you have no energy for life, it's not really a good balance in your life. So I really believe in having some of that energy and the positive thoughts and feelings about work to be able to go home and live a productive life. And that leads to greater health and happiness. The negatives of being a really cohesive team can be an us versus them. It could be your department kind of versus another department on campus, especially if you're vying for resources, finances, time, any of these things. And it can kind of split the bigger team, which would be the university or Idaho or the United States. Where you can also get some social loafing in there, where a few people kind of slack off if they're not being, feel that they're part of that team, and also some groupthink that we'll look at a little bit later on. What are some examples of us versus them that you can think of? We get so focused maybe on the fight and the competition that we lose sight of the end goal or the amazing ability for the two teams to actually work towards that common goal. And you see it in politics right now too. We've got two teams, they both want the common good of the country, they both got different ways of doing it, and then we spend a lot of time arguing about which team is better than the other team. Well, we really want to know, well, how are you going to do the things you want, you say you're going to do? That's what we want. We want to see the outcome in the process. But we get so busy on the fighting sometimes that the energy is wasted. So we have to really consider where our energies are going each day. So asking ourselves, how is this useful? How is this building to my happiness? How is this useful to me and my energy, but also to the team? Are we going in the direction that we want to go as a team? Are we going to accomplish the goals that we need to? So where does the playing nice fit in? My philosophy, and I know it's sometimes a little bit naive and a little bit optimistic, but this is what I believe in because it helps me to keep going, is that really we are playing on the same team. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it, or it can feel like one person is really trying not to play on that team. But we are. We're playing on the same team for the good of the United States. We're playing on that same team. Sometimes we play very differently, and sometimes we're a little bit of competition to try and get there. And we're also playing on the same team as women. We're trying to move forward with that too. All our actions, hopefully, are related to the greater good. And again, sometimes we do it differently. Sometimes we misinterpret what each other's doing and we think, well, maybe they're not, maybe they're trying to go the other way. But generally, people are working for the greater good. And as we say, competition can be a little bit bad, but my question is, who are you competing with? Are you competing for your own happiness, your greater good, or are you competing for others' perceptions of you? Because you want to look or act a particular way, and this can relate either to being the clown, and you often see that in classrooms too, people messing about and being the class clown because it's somebody else's perception of them. Or it can be looking like you've got it all together and doing more than you ever could possibly really do in a day and half killing yourself in the process. Are you doing it for the greater good or are you doing it for others' perception of you? We need to find some balance in there somewhere. So we said the difference between the team and the group. The team is about the goal. We've got to have some form of goal. So these are my questions. What is the goal? Is there a defined goal in your department where you work? But do we know how to get there? Is there directions on exactly what to do to get to that place, this goal? There are some, and it's ever changing. But does that trickle down to your position and what you do every day? Do you know what you need to do every day to get towards that goal that we have set or that somebody has set for us? At least to the second question, who knows what the goal is? Does everybody in where you work, does everybody in this room know what the goal is? There's usually somebody who doesn't, and people are just going along doing their day to day. The goals can be the university goals, they can be departmental goals. And they can be your own individual personal goals. And those goals continue to challenge us and to help us move forward personally outside of whatever the university is doing or our department's doing. Sometimes we look at the outcome rather than the process. One thing that struck me the other week, somebody had, enrollment was up and graduate enrollment was up too, and somebody had sent around an email thanking people for their efforts because we're obviously doing something right to increase the levels of enrollment. It's very nice to get a thank you. Thank yous are quite rare, which is something else I'll talk about too. We need to thank people, tell them specifically what they're thanking us for. And then I got thinking, and I said, I don't know if I've done anything differently. So what have I done differently to increase that enrollment? Is it really me? Do I need to keep doing what I'm doing, which could be nothing at all? Or am I really busting my butt? I don't know what they're thanking me for. How do I continue doing what I'm doing, or do I do it differently to reach the goal? I do like the thank you, but I need to know what I'm being thanked for so it encourages that behavior to move on too. We need to process the progress, to check in, see where we're at with our goals. We need to see also if we're not doing well, what exactly am I doing that is causing things not to go well? As much as the wins, we say, fantastic, we've got this award, and we don't spend a lot of time processing these things. Improve our problem-solving skills. How do we fix things more efficiently? And really, in academia, things are dynamic. We'll set a goal and we'll work on it, and bam, something else comes in. We've got a new idea that we've got to work on, something else happens. So what happens to that goal? Do we shelf it and come back to it? Or do we say, all right, we're going to extend the goal line out? Do we adjust it? Or do we just stick it under the table and it never gets finished? And the things that don't get finished cause some frustration in that team. So these are my questions for you. What happens if we don't have a goal at all? If there are no goals? You can get lost not knowing what you're doing every day or what you're doing it for. And I'm sure we've all said, why am I here? Why am I doing this at some point or other? And people generally do their own thing, whatever that thing is. What happens if the goal is not clear? It's very similar, but also you get frustration, confusion. You get one person doing one thing and another doing another, which can be complete opposite and counteract each other. The goal is kind of funky. You're not really sure what it is. You're not really buying into it. And if you don't buy into it, you spend half of your time not buying into it rather than doing anything about it, or it irritating the heck out of you, which is not a productive use of your own energy. Everybody has a particular role on a team. What are the normal roles on a traditional sports team? Do we have a captain? Yep. We have players. We might have a trainer. We might have a support team. Maybe cheer squad. Coach?
Referees.
Yep. Referees. I didn't put referees in. And I also put a crazy soccer parent in there somewhere on the sidelines overbearing. So they're the traditional in the sports team. And I want you to think about, which role do you find yourself in? What role do you find yourself in the most? Are you more the coach? Are you feel like you're more on the support team? Are you on the sidelines? Are you the overbearing soccer parent who wants to know everything that's going on to kind of micromanage things? Are you just the player? You wait to be told when to go and then you go at it and then you're done and it's all good. And then the next question is, what would it be like to be on a team full of coaches or full of players or full of cheerleaders? Might be good for the first 5 minutes, but it'd be very hard to get something done. You need the full complement. So wherever you fit in, you play a key role. We need all of them to get things done. The other thing is, would you like to be another player on the team? Would you like to be more of that cheer squad or the captain now and again? Think about how you could change it up. What would make you a better, different member on the team? Instead of trying harder in a particular position, try different. If what you're doing as a support crew member or as a leader is not working, don't keep doing the same thing. Don't try harder and harder, because again, you're wasting your energy. But try and mix it up and do something different. We know a lot of times with the goals, people are familiar with the SMART formula: specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, time-based. But the thing we forget about the goals for the team too is we were talking about this the other day, and we said we need to make it I'm SMART. So we have individual goals as well as the team goals, but we also have to have that mutual goal that everybody agrees on. So individual and mutual developed within there. What happens if one person on the team decides to try and go a different direction? So if this person here decides they want to go this way with the team and take them this way, it can work well only if everybody else understands the goal is to move this way. Otherwise, what automatically happens when someone starts pulling? embrace, right? And it's the same when someone starts pushing. You automatically get ready to push back, which again is not a good use of the energy. So we have to figure out if we want to go a particular way, how to set up what the goal is, but also tell everyone how we go there. We can't just say we're going this way without people knowing we have to all walk this way. And that's very simplistic, and it gets a lot more tricky in real life with real issues that we deal with. If you have multiple people pulling multiple ways, it gets ugly, hurts your hands, and it's what I would call drama, which is not a useful use of anyone's time whatsoever. I can't even watch it on TV, it just drains me. What happens if somebody disengages and drops the string, or a couple of people drop it? Weakens, it doesn't fully collapse, but it does weaken. We could lay something on it when everyone's attached to it and it would be relatively supportive. But when a few people drop it and disengage, it becomes weaker. And we either have to figure out how to get them engaged, find their motivation, give them specific tasks, change up the role they're in, because maybe they just disagree with that supportive role or that leadership role. They don't want it. So maybe we figure out how to change that role or how to motivate them, or even get them detached and on a different task, and then we can regroup, shuffle it around, and move on. But if we wait weeks and weeks and weeks, waiting for them to come back, or you know, maybe they're kind of, I'll kind of touch it, they're not really interested. It wastes our energy and our productivity too. And the last thing down here is the role acknowledgement, the thank yous and what you're thankful for, which I think is really important. And I think that's something we don't do as much of that we could. And don't say you're thankful for something you're not either. People see right through that. But when you say it, mean it. It's the same as a compliment. It's wasted if you don't share it. So make sure we share some of those too.
Dr. Emma Jane Grindley, sports psychologist at the University of Idaho. This presentation, How to Play Nice, is from the 2008 Athena Women's Leadership Conference. Installment number two. Got conflict? Kay Kiskanen is a certified professional mediator. She's mediated for the courts and youth services. She's registered in Idaho and Washington, and she's experienced in workplace conflict, workshop presentation, and facilitating group processes. In this two-part presentation, Kay helps us to identify the different conflict management styles, such as avoiding, accommodating, compromising, and collaborating. Here's Kay Kiskanen.
So conflict. Conflict is kind of like the weather to me, I think. We always have it. If it's a nice day like today, you might not need a jacket. But in a couple months, you'll probably need a parka and some boots and some mittens and some scarves and things like that. You can't stop the weather. You can't stop conflict, but you can help manage it by, you know, learning some conflict management skills, learning your conflict management style, and also just like the weather, you know, it's a raincoat, rainy day, put on a raincoat or umbrella. It's still not going to happen, but you can manage how you react to it. The dictionary definition. Conflict is a mental struggle resulting from incompatible or opposing needs. I like the Latin word. I think it means the Latin for conflict is con and flagere, to strike together. You know, there's a conflict. You have something I want. We both want the same thing. Something's happening. You're beating me up because you have power. There's somehow that kind of struggle. But on the other hand, if you manage conflict well, out of that struggle, you can really learn a lot. If your team is undergoing, some of you work at UI, some of you work at WSU, I know, if there is a conflict in your workplace or at home and you manage that conflict really well and you come out of it with a really nice resolution, you've all learned a lot. Your team has worked together, your family has figured something out, you have a new skill set, you know how to do it the next time. And that sort of striking together sometimes can be a good thing. What else do I say? Conflict can be many forms of war. Oh, how about political debates right now? And I'm doing some more research on conflict. The Chinese have an interesting character for conflict, and it's the intertwined symbols of challenge and opportunity. So there, as I said, there's always conflict around us, just like the weather. It's up to you to decide how you want to manage that conflict. If you see it ahead of time, you know, can you sort of head it off at the pass? If it's in front of you, what is it you want to do? There are a lot of sources of conflict. One is resources. You have something, and I want it. Whatever that is, you have the corner office. We're remodeling at work, and even though I have seniority, you've got that corner office, and boy, I'm going to be mad at you for a long time, and you're not going to know why, but I'm just going to really just come after you and belittle you and just undermine your self-esteem and just tell everybody you're mean because you got that corner office, and I thought I deserved it. Or we both want the same thing. We're at the yard sale. It said no early birds, and it's 8 o'clock, and you got there 2 minutes before me, and I want it, and we both want that thingy that we saw in the paper, and we both want it, and how are we going to fight that out? Another source of conflict is psychological needs. Let me say that the first ones are the first type of conflict, the resources ones, are usually pretty easy or easier to manage because you know what that is. We're both battling over that really nice fur coat that we saw at the yard sale, you know, or something like that. We it's a real specific thing, and so those are usually easier to resolve. The next ones are psychological things. For some reason, there's some power control, there's some self-esteem things, you're threatening my needs. These are things I'm not going to be as obvious to tell you and say, Christine, I don't like the way you treated me in that meeting. I'm not going to very easily, and it's just really hard to do, and so I may just take it out. But those are harder to talk about because there's some psychological things underneath there, and I'm not going to want to talk about that, you know, that I felt belittled or something like that. And the third one are values. I mean, we can argue about who we're going to elect, which baseball team is better, Yankees, or whatever. You're not going to convince me that I'm going to cheer for the Red Sox, you know. But those are hard things. I mean, you're not going to be able to convince me, you know, that I'm going to be a Red Sox fan. You're not going to convince me to do something that's against my belief or values. And when we have a conflict on that, you know, the best thing we're probably going to be able to do is respect each other that we do have a difference and just leave it at that and just allow you to do what it is that you feel you want to do given your beliefs and your values. So these two nice fellows, Kenneth Thomas and Ralph Kilman, studied conflict and found that there were two dimensions, those of you in math, the X and the Y coordinates. There are two basic ideas in terms of conflict. How cooperative, in terms of your conflict style, how cooperative are you to meet the needs of the person with whom you're in conflict? And the other one is, how assertive are you to meet your own needs? If you're really high in the cooperativeness, I'm in conflict with you, and I'm going to be really high, I'm an accommodator. Because, oh, you want to go there for lunch? Sure, no problem. Want to go to a movie? Okay, no problem. Oh, I'll take out the trash? Sure, why not? Yeah, you're giving in to the other person, you're going to be a really nice friend. Because no matter what you want, they're going to give it to you, because they're an accommodator. They're very low on their own one, and if you're low in terms of cooperating with the other person and low on asserting yourself, you are an avoider. You're going to just wait for who knows what to happen, but you're just not going to do anything. And that was my culture. I grew up a little in Minnesota, a little Finnish person where, what, no conflict, I don't see any conflict, I don't have any conflict. But a lot of these are basically also another workshop, sorry, a family of origin. You know, you kind of learn what, you know, how your family did it, and that's kind of how you handle conflict. So you're an avoider if you're low in terms of asserting your own needs, and you're low in cooperating with the other person. Of course, you can read up there, too. On the high end of that is the competitor. I'm just going to battle you out because I have to win. No matter what your needs are, my needs are more important. I don't care. I got that corner office, even though you had seniority. I got that, you know, I got the raise, too bad, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to battle with you. Or fight in the hallway of French ad. That's another story.
Yeah.
Read the paper. I don't know. In the middle, people always talk about let's compromise. So if you're a compromiser, you're kind of cooperative with the other person's needs, and you're kind of asserting your own needs. But the middle point isn't always the right idea. You want to sell a car, and you want $5,000 for it because you want $5,000 because that's what you need to get the down payment for something else, but you really want $5,000. I want to buy your car. It's a nice car, but I'm only willing to pay $4,000 because that's really all I have because, you know, the way the economy is now, I cashed my 401k in and all I got was $4,000 for my investment. Oh, so what do you usually do with those at a yard sale too? Somebody wants $5,000, somebody wants $4,950, $4,100. What do you end up doing? You end up in the middle somewhere in there at $4,500. So it's not what you really wanted, and it's not what the other person really wanted. So it's kind of a half win, half lose. You really haven't addressed the issues of what's going on there. You just found the middle point. And that's a quick way to resolve it, but you're in the middle point. And then, of course, the famous one is to collaborate. If we're in conflict, I'm going to cooperate with you. I'm going to listen to what's bothering you. What are the issues that you're concerned about? What are the interests that you're concerned about with us? And likewise, you're going to spend some time and talk to me and hear about my needs. We're going to cooperate, we're going to collaborate, and we're going to find the right solution that meets as best as possible the needs of both of us in this situation. So those are the five conflict management styles. A little Finnish avoider here, the nice little accommodator, the Italian competitor, hint, 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 compromiser, and the wonderful collaborator. So this is where the test comes in. And find your Thomas Kilman. So if you're an avoider, you know, there are advantages to that. And sometimes it's useful when the risk outweighs the gain. One thing I've learned in my 30-some years of being a feminist and trying to make social, political, and economic change, I've learned when it's kind of time just to sort of let it happen and just not get involved. I'm not going to make a change. Yes, I know one person can make a difference, but I'd like to know when can I make that difference? And if it's a time when the risk outweighs the gain, some of you know I worked in IT on campus and I love the people I work with, but I knew sometimes I'm just staying out of it. You know, they're getting paid more money to figure that out, and even though I disagree, I'm not taking any risk. It's just not worth burning the bridge for that. And it can postpone tension. There are times it's good to be an avoider. You just don't want to do it right now. And sometimes you need more information. Sometimes it's not the right time to make that decision, and it's okay. But the disadvantage is if you're an avoider, you don't get an opportunity to say what you feel. And you need to know that. It's a temporary solution because it usually got to come back and bite you somewhere where you don't want to have it. You may feel guilty for not solving a problem. Maybe you let your kids handle something and you know you should have stepped in, and because it's easy to be an avoider, and lots of mediators are avoiders, and I'm learning time not to be. And you can increase your inner tension. You got this guilt going on because you didn't solve it. And it is what we call a lose-lose. You lose, and then you're letting the other person lose too because you've never really solved it at this point in time. But as I said, there are advantages, and you know, as one ages, one learns tons of stuff about when it's a good thing to do that. So let's talk about accommodating. And accommodating has its advantages as well. Very harmonious. I mean, if you're always giving in or somebody's always giving in to you and they're the accommodator, boy, that's a pretty harmonious relationship. You know, that's get along just fine because they're doing whatever it is you want to do. There's no disruption. There's no competition. And again, it's useful if the issues aren't important to you, kind of like an avoider. If you just want to give in, again, sometimes I know when the handwriting's on the wall and it's just not worth going after something, just let them decide it. But you're sacrificing your own point of view if you give in to somebody else. Let's talk about competing, and competing has its moments as well. Sometimes you need quick action. Somebody needs to come in and step in and decide what that is, and you just battle it out. Because you have more power, you have economic power, you can debate better, whatever. It just sometimes it solves it really quickly. And it's useful for a person in the more overtly powerful situation. You know, I'm the lousy manager and the director says to do this. Well, I think the director kind of wins. Many disadvantages, as you can see. You stop exploring new approaches. You're just battling it out. One's goals may be achieved at the expense of the other. There's little commitment to the solution. And if you're coming in and say, this is the answer to that, and you're gonna do this project this way, because I say so, because I'm the boss, I have more money, I have more power, whatever, I'm not going to be very committed to that solution. It's what we call a win-lose. If I'm a competitor, I win. I got what I wanted. And then the other person loses. It could be seen as a temporary solution. And if you do this a lot, you could be seen as a bully. So compromising not unlike competing in some ways, you get a pretty quick solution. You know, I want to sell the car for $5,000. You want to pay me $4,000, blah, 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 $4,500. Yep, sold. But it does show some consideration of the other person. You're finding the middle ground. You're telling the other person, I hear what you're saying. I understand a little bit, but let's just find this middle point and get a solution for that. The disadvantage is you're usually not finding anything creative. You know, thinking outside the box, finding a real long-term, mutually satisfactory solution to this conflict, you're just usually finding something in the midpoint, and it may not be very creative. And both people can feel that they've lost. You know, I didn't really get what I wanted, and you didn't really get what you wanted, and so, you know, it's okay. And again, it could be temporary. But in the long term, we love collaborating. So you're mutually, we have a conflict of some sort. The boss is gone for sudden reason, and we don't know. Usually the boss picks one of us to be in charge while the office, and this person has some subtle medical leave or something like that. We're both going to be, somebody has to be in charge for a week or so. Let's talk about how this works, how we're going to work this out together. And so we can honestly tell the other person what's going on, what are the issues. Again, you have to be honest about some of these things. If it really bothers you, you know, it's really the way you got to do it. And sometimes you'll find a new solution. When you put your both heads together, you might be surprised what the solution is. The famous story of the library where two people are sitting in a library in this certain space because that's where their research work is. And it's one person opens the window because it's really hot, and the other person doesn't want the draft because allergies and this and that. And they're opening the window, and they're closing the window, and they're opening the window, and they're closing the window because it's just too hot, too cold, too windy, too wet. The librarian comes in, closes that, goes to another room, and opens the window a little bit. There's now a little draft without any direct thing, and it's a whole solution. It wasn't that window that's a problem. It was the problem, but the solution was a different window. Open a different window a little bit, get enough air to circulate, not an allergy, and you can both work in the same place. It's a mutual solution. You both are committed to that.
We've been listening to mediator Kay Kiskinen from her presentation at the 2008 Athena Women's Leadership Conference at the University of Idaho. That's where we're getting all of our segments on today's show. This is Yin Radio, and the theme for the show is Wisdom from Athena. Now we're going to go back to Kay and her Got Conflict workshop. The next set of excerpts from the workshop is about solutions for solving conflict at work and at home. She addresses specific questions from the audience, which includes some sound advice for mothers of teenage children.
Teach you the biggest thing I learned in conflict management is to ask the question, what can I do to help make this happen? What can I do to make this happen? And so, what is it that I can do to help? If you turn it around on you, what is it that I need to do to help make you get to the, you know, to do the practice, to do the workouts, to do the bench presses, whatever it is that you do. What is it that I can do? My famous one, for several years I managed the summer co-ed softball team. And we played in Pullman because they had a summer program, but we all lived in Moscow. So we really wanted to kind of practice in Moscow because we didn't want to drive out. Pullman's lovely, thank you, but I didn't want to all drive over there and have all 20 of us come back. So I had heard the Moscow Parks and Recreation person who does the scheduling of the ball fields was a really mean and crabby person. I don't know. She doesn't work there anymore. Honest, she doesn't. She doesn't. But I had heard this, so I thought, I just got my basic 40 in mediation. I'm going to call her and see if I can get a practice space, because I heard she never does that. So I called, and a really important tactic is to not blindside somebody. I called her during the lunch hour, and I left a message for her. I said, please call me at work, sorry. Please call me, and I'm looking to reserve a place for softball practice. So I was kind of ready, and she was kind of ready. I'm like, oh, all ready. So she called, nope, you can't have a place because you're a Pullman team. I said, well, what can I do then? What could you have some suggestions for me for whatever? Next thing I knew, she's having other ideas for me to do stuff. So, yes, I did get my softball field, but I got some really concrete ideas from her about some other solutions for other places to play. You know, and she maybe next time understood some of these situations, because I pay taxes here too. But anyway, so that was my moderate success. But again, don't blindside somebody. And if you can model the behavior, and that's what I try to do in mediations as well, when people are in conflict, try to model the behavior that you want them to do. You know, whether it's an appointment with them to talk about those issues, here's the effect of that. They may not realize what's happening or what their paths are if they don't continue that. If you tend to dominate, and you know you dominate, please at least try to listen to the other person and watch your body language. Again, I'm over here and I'm yelling and I'm right in front of your face. But anyway, if you can know the kind of reaction that you have, and hopefully you all have good friends who are really going to say, you know, Kay, there's broccoli in your teeth, or Kay, you're just not doing this really well, or whatever your name is. Anyway, really try to listen. Approach the other person with the assumption that you don't have all the information. And really, we don't have all the information. We're not in their shoes. We don't know their perspective. But anyway, pretend you don't have all the information. Again, watch your body language, your tone, and don't be so quick to think that your solution is the right one, because the librarian could go open the window in the other room. I found this when I was doing some research on conflict. Take advantage of the ambiguity in the world. If there's something out there that's kind of loose, look at it, and maybe it can be something different. As I said, if there's a conflict at work or at home, and you learn to manage those conflicts really well, you've really made a more harmonious relationship. People on your work teams, or whatever you're doing, if you can work through something, the next time will be easier, and you can sort of do stuff better.
We want to create peace atmosphere, but someone always bring up conflicts and make gossips, and can we do?
You can ignore them. You can model the behavior, or you can just say that's inappropriate. These are hard to do. If you're in a workplace and you have colleagues that you report to or are equal to, it's sometimes hard to say those things. I mean, I trusted my boss enough to say, please don't ever talk to me about like that in a public meeting. I mean, I was walking back and I was kind of scared, but I knew I had to say it because I would have just melted in a puddle if somebody had done that to me in public. If there's a facilitator for your group meetings, I don't know if there's someone in charge who can be brought attention to. I don't know how that, you know, but if you're in a meeting and somebody, you know, tries to compete or bring some things up, the other person maybe, if there's somebody who's seen as the authority or the coordinator of that meeting, to say, you know, that's not part of the topic or that's not the agenda. I also do workshops on parliamentary procedure and how to run meetings. You've already spoken twice to this issue. I mean, you've already made your point or something like that. But some people just want to compete. And so my answer to that sometimes is let them compete. I have sisters. I just had my 60th birthday in Vegas with my two sisters last week. And so one sister, I love them both, but likes to compete. And so I just don't play. You know, she tells my other sister, Kay is one of the worst cooks in the world. You know, I don't care. I mean, she could be the best cook. I just don't care. I mean, if you've ever eaten at my house, you know, luckily it's going to be good pizza takeout. I don't know. But, you know, I just don't care. So if you want to compete with me on that, I don't care. But you want to play horseshoes? I'll play horseshoes. I don't know. Yeah, Christine?
That I was going to say in terms of collaborations and the zing. We try to deal with, you know, everything takes energy to do this, and I think, you know, I tell my students, you know, choose your battle. Mm-hmm. You know, choose when it really means something to you, and you really feel that it's worth the energy to pursue that. But if we tried to collaborate on every decision that we did, you know, I just don't think we'd get anything done because we'd run out of energy and time.
So that could be. There's also one other thing I was going to throw in here for that chance. You know, if there's an opportunity, I guess the story is a fellow has a dream he's going to win the lottery. And, you know, God sort of speaks to him and says, you're going to win the lottery. So time goes by and time goes by and time goes by. He doesn't win the lottery. He goes, God, you said I was going to win the lottery. He says, buy a ticket. No, the idea is, if you don't take a chance, if you don't try, I mean, I knew I was never going to get I probably wasn't going to softball field, but I'm not going to get, she's not going to call me up and say, hey, want a softball field for practice on Saturday? I mean, she's not going to give me one unless I ask. So you have to decide which ones which ones are the ones worth collaborating on. If it's a long-term effort at work and you're going to be working with the same people for a while, you probably want to have a really good, healthy relationship and do those. And sometimes it's a balancing act.
When someone presents a conflict, and they're especially a habitual conflict presenter, I've started saying, well, what is your proposed solution? And direct people toward thinking about solutions. And so I'm no expert in this field.
Or I've been in meetings with somebody. It would be a great idea if we did this. And, of course, they have all the ideas, but none of the action either. I think that's also part of it. So if you're the one who wants to stir it up, you know, what is your solution? And ask them honestly in a non-threatening way as well. Well, that was really nice, Phil. But, you know, what do you suggest then that we do? How do you suggest we run this meeting? Or what would you suggest would be the deadline for this project? If we're behind already 3 months, you know, what is it that we should be doing? It's a balance in terms of deciding. But there are pluses and minuses for all those, as we said. Sometimes you need a quick answer. And you can be a competitor, or you can just give in if the issues aren't important to you. As you said, decide your battles and just give in and see what happens. Anybody else want to share something? Go ahead.
I'm an avoider, and especially at home with my senior in high school son, and my husband gets really mad at me because I'm a pushover, you know, and he'll say, I'm going to go stay overnight with so-and-so or whatever. Like, okay, because I can't think of a really good reason why not, other than maybe he should just be at home once in a while, you know?
Most important for me, Bill, whatever his name is, you know, that we have family time at home. I mean, we hear about people who don't spend so many dinners together. It's really important, and you know, I know you're growing up and want to be with your friends, but, you know, I'm going to always be here for you, and you're going to be taking care of me when I'm 80 in the nursing home. Do you have family meetings where you talk about, this is what's coming up in this week? I find, you know, a weekly sort of schedule, say, look, this is what's happening during the week. This is, you know, I want to spend time with you. I know you want to spend time with your friends. You want to watch some TV. You want to do some sports. Let's look at the week ahead. Let's see what kind of things are out there. And let's see what the parameters are. You know, what is a reasonable amount of time? And to spend how many dinners at home? And what is a reasonable hour to come in and during those school nights?
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
And that good idea wraps up our presentation about conflict from Kay Keskinen, certified mediator, and that comes from her session at the Athena Women's Leadership Conference at the University of Idaho last fall. Now, you can check out Kay's website at users.moscow.com/Keskinen, K-E-S-K-I-N-E-N. And there you'll learn more about Kay and her skills, including her skills at pitching horseshoes. So we're going to move from conflict and fighting to another topic, passion. The Athena Leadership Conference was organized around the theme of 3 C's, consciousness, communication, and common purpose. But at the conference lunch, Diane Daly-Larson added another element to those C's, and this one is P, for passion. Here's Diane Daly-Larson.
Each of you has made a commitment to be here today. Another C I would add to the themes of consciousness, communication, and common purpose. I added commitment to our theme as I think showing up is one of the first steps in leading a purposeful life. When I was an undergrad juggling 3 jobs and 20 credits, I showed up in my student club organizations, which led into future national leadership positions within my professional organization. It was at those meetings that I first got my introduction to the University of Idaho and met some of your wonderful women leaders here today, like Jo Ellen Force. I also met my husband through the Society of American Foresters, opening the doors to another level of commitment and passion. Passion, that was my computer password for the first 5 years of my career, reminding me to commit to every task with passion. Now I have a variety of symbols that make it seem like I am having to live an expletive deleted day. Just kidding. But back to passion. Living with passion is much easier if you have defined and live by your own principles and ethics. Then you are in control, and you won't have those expletive deleted days. live a life of integrity to others and most importantly to yourself. You will always have your own intrinsic rewards, especially during the most complex and difficult moments and decisions in your life, even when you make mistakes. My Achilles heels? Well, I learned it once in a development session just like this one. It's overcommitting my time. It's my biggest breach of living a life of integrity. I struggle with that today. 10 minutes until the next commitment? Of course there's time to fit in three more things before then. I have so many interests and want to be present, to make a difference, to be a citizen, and participate in the many circles of my life. I'll be learning and relearning the lesson of time and integrity in many forms until the day I die. So you've got passion. Then share your passion. Be in relationship with those around you. Communicate and find your common purpose. Seek those that are different than you in gender, culture, and generation. You cannot be all things, but you can surround yourself with a rich tapestry and a full complement of others. I hope you will find and connect with some of those people here today. Share in their yearning, in their gifts, and in their wisdom. I believe with the three things I've been talking about, number one, being present, number two, living a life of integrity defined by your own principles, and number three, being in, fostering, mentoring, and expanding your relationships. With these three things, you will be ready for any change, a variety of leadership roles, and be able to define your own rewards in life. The journey of leadership in life is not a straight path. So, this is a women's leadership conference. Why was I invited? I'm the spouse and a stay-at-home mom. If someone had predicted my life for me 15 years ago, I would have said they were on drugs and with more than a little bit of indignation. I was a forester, a round peg in a round hole. I was recognized for my passion and leadership. One of my life's biggest compliments is that I had the ethics of a Gippo logger. I was the first woman and the youngest person ever awarded Montana's Forester of the Year by my professional society and the Montana Loggers Association. I was professional. I was a collaborative team player. I was going places. I have and still have the most wonderful circle of strong, independent women friends. Steve says that I collect friends that march to a different drummer. Maybe he's one of them, too. We climbed mountains around the world, fought for and organized around social justice and environmental causes. We were not in the mold of our mothers. When I was an undergrad, I thought people like me now were stale and in a rut, which, by the way, is my least favorite word. Today, I am the only one of my friends married with kids. All the rest are still activists. Yet we still have deep, soulful connections because we grew our lives based on my three themes. One of my friends has come out as a lesbian and is living in a committed gay relationship, lobbying nationally for breast cancer causes. Another is saving every animal in the state of Virginia as head of the Humane Society. And another lives in a cabin in the woods with her organic garden and is as feisty a feminist as ever. Me? I drive a minivan. When we first got a minivan, I went into deep denial, kicking and screaming into the lifestyle I was leading. For heaven's sakes, I am the stereotypical soccer mom. Me! I have a magnet on my car even to prove it. I'm a soccer team manager, a classroom volunteer, and a scout leader. The matriarch of a typical American family of four. One boy, one girl. Living in a suburban house, not a cabin in the woods I helped build myself. I am, by societal definition, a stay-at-home mom. What an oxymoron. I am never at home. However, I am still a round peg in a round hole. I am a consummate community volunteer. I know I make a difference in my community, in the life of a child, in my village of families that work together to raise our children. I am still surrounded by strong women, women that make a difference. Public service is a passion for me, and I realize that I practice these three themes and what I do for all of my communities every day. My rewards, they're a little different now. A hug from a child at the farmer's market that I tutored in reading 6 months previously. A note from a lower-level staff person whom I worked with over a decade ago, now at the time of their retirement, letting me know that the thank yous I wrote, the compassion and flexibility we shared to get through difficult life events, are still remembered today and made a difference to them at their time of retirement. The words from a disabled soldier about the hope and promise of Operation Education at the University of Idaho. The Palouse Discovery Science Center, abuzz with activity every day, not an empty shell of a building any longer. My children telling me they love me almost every day. These are rewards beyond measure. My cup overfloweth. I tell you my stories not to edify myself, but to highlight every person has a story and a journey. And each of you will travel your own path into the future. A small gesture today, a life lesson you can resonate to, a leadership role embrace, a sidestep on your main path that might later circle around to be the main tenet of your life. Today, you have the opportunity to embrace all the richness around you. Jackie Matchinson said, "It takes each of us to make a difference for all of us." Take advantage of today. Who knows what the mirror holds for you in the future? But if you live purposefully, true to yourself, and in relationship with others, you will shine. We can all make a difference by being inclusive and working towards common purposes. Shine on with Zing!
Zing, zing, zoom, zoom, my little heart goes boom when I hear this melody playing. Zing, zing, zoom, zoom, a little simple tune.
Diane Daly-Larson was talking about passion during the Athena Conference lunch. And this recording that you heard was made after the conference when she reread her presentation for Yin Radio. Now this is going to wrap up the show Wisdom from Athena. Today's show is brought to you in large part by the University of Idaho Women's Center, and their mission is to promote and advocate for gender equity on campus and in the community through programs and services that educate and support all individuals into building an inclusive and compassionate society. You can find the UI Women's Center on the web at www.uidaho.edu/womenscenter. As you ponder what to do with your newfound wisdom and what to do with this new year, I'm going to leave you with a song from Isiro Oblin, and the title is Wisdom.
Sounds a girl and never tries to leave on its own. Wherever your friends, he looks through your window and bend. He's a wind to talk about your wisdom. Oh yes, a wind to talk about your feel. Shake it out, my pretty zin, the sequence depends on.
In addition to the UI Women's Center, today's show was brought to you by Anna Maria Roque, Tara Malmquist, and myself, who recorded the segments from the Athena Women's Leadership Conference. Anna Maria Roque produced and edited all of today's installments. Yin Radio is on MySpace, and you can learn more about this and other Yin Radio programs, listen to past shows, get podcasts, and subscribe to our e-newsletter for information about upcoming shows and Yin Radio news. You can do all this at yinradio.org. Yin Radio is produced at KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, by me and by VP Foundation. That's V as in voice, P as in power, Foundation. You can reach Yin Radio at yinradio@vpfound.org. I'm Sandy Billings, and thanks for joining me. Until next week.